the headlines, the Russian president signs a new naval doctrine, which says Washington's quest to dominate the oceans and NATO's expansion are the biggest threats facing Moscow. Supporters of Iraqi cleric Muqtada al-Sadr remain in the parliament building for a second day amid political deadlock over the formation of a new government. And China says it will resolutely safeguard its national sovereignty and territorial integrity amid rising tensions with the U.S. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Russia's President Vladimir Putin has signed decrees approving the country's new naval doctrine, which names the U.S. and NATO as the biggest threats facing Russia. Putin signed the decrees ahead of a Navy Day parade in St. Petersburg. The new doctrine says Washington's strategic objective to dominate the world's oceans and NATO's expansion towards Russia's borders are the main challenges to the country's national security and development. Moscow views NATO as an existential threat. It cited Ukraine's plans to join NATO as the reason for its ongoing special operation in that country. Addressing the Navy Day parade, Putin said the Russian Navy would receive unique cruise missiles within the next few months.
Our Navy is constantly improving, enough to mention the latest Zircon hypersonic missile systems, which have no countertypes in the world and no barriers. Dear comrades, their delivery to the Russian armed forces will begin in the coming months.
Putin said the area of the deployment of the new missiles will depend on Russia's interests. The country has conducted previous test launches of the Zircon from warships and submarines over the past year. Hypersonic weapons can travel at 9 times the speed of sound. And now the latest updates from the war in Ukraine. Officials in the southern city of Mykolaiv say Russian bombardments have left at least 2 civilians dead and 2 more wounded. The officials call the pounding the strongest strike of the war so far. Mykolaiv is the closest Ukrainian city to the southern front, where Ukrainian forces are looking to launch a major counteroffensive against Russia. Strikes also pounded the northeastern regions of Kharkiv and Sumy. Kiev has already issued an evacuation order for tens of thousands of citizens in Donetsk. In the meantime, Moscow has accused Kiev of conducting a drone strike on its Black Sea fleet on the Crimea Peninsula. Russia says an explosive device from a commercial drone wounded 6 of its personnel. Kiev has denied any involvement. Moscow has invited experts from the United Nations and the Red Cross to probe the deaths of dozens of Ukrainian prisoners in a jail in eastern Ukraine held by pro-Russia forces. In a statement, the Defense Ministry said it favored an objective investigation into an attack on the prison. The facility in the frontline town of Olenikva, Donetsk province, was on Friday. Pro-Russia forces in Donetsk say 53 Ukrainian prisoners of war were killed and dozens more wounded in the strike. Moscow accuses Kiev of attacking the prison with U.S.-made rockets to prevent Ukrainian soldiers from surrendering. Ukraine, however, denies any involvement. It says Russia conducted the raid to put the blame on Kiev. Yanis Putkonin is the chief editor of the MV Leti, and he earlier joined us from Lugansk to tell us more about the recent jail shelling in Ukraine. Let's take a listen.
It's obvious. You can, of course, make, and it's good that the Russia invited international bodies. That it's an example that nobody in this side, in our side, has nothing to hide with this. And when you look from where the shells have landed, it will be obvious investigation that everybody will see the truth and that the. There is no other way than they have been fired from the long distance with long distance weapons from the Ukrainian side. And of course, all the traces will prove it. And even now, the specialist can look from the several videos while positioning the house in the right place on the map and watching the destruction of these prison buildings. Everybody can basically do the math. So we don't have anything to hide. We're very sorry that the Kiev regime again fought this state terrorism, and because it's just not fair. These guys were there. They did their best in Mariupol, and the Kiev regime wanted to kill them there first, and now they are killing them when they are prisoners. So very hopeless situation for these guys.
Iraq remains gripped by political uncertainty as supporters of Shia cleric Muqtada al-Sadr continue to occupy the parliament building for a second day. This is the second time the protesters have stormed the building in a week amid a deadlock over the formation of a new government. Sadr's movement says that the sit-in will continue until further notice. Parliament Speaker Mohammed al-Habousi says all parliamentary meetings have been suspended. According to the health ministry, at least 100 protesters and 25 security personnel have been injured in the clashes. The demonstrators are opposed to the nomination of former minister Mohammed Shia al-Sudani to replace Prime Minister Mustafa al-Kadhimi. The prime minister has urged talks to resolve the crisis.
The political blocs must sit down and negotiate and understand for the sake of Iraq and the Iraqi people. And the language of treason and exclusion must be avoided. I call on everyone to become patient and rational and not to be drawn into confrontation. And I call on citizens not to clash with the security forces and to respect the state institutions.
Iraqi political parties have also reacted to the storming of the parliament. The Fatah Alliance called for dialogue to resolve the differences among political parties. The head of the National Wisdom Movement made a similar demand. Amar al-Hakim said political blocs should hold negotiations on the basis of preserving Iraq's national interest to tackle the current problems. A bloc led by Sadr won most of the seats in October 2021 parliamentary elections. However, the cleric asked all blocs MPs to resign last month after he failed to reach the two-thirds majority needed to pick a president to form a government. Our Baghdad bureau chief, Navid Behrouz, earlier gave us an update from the Iraqi parliament. He told us more about the protesters' demands and how long they plan to occupy the parliament building.
These protesters are demanding a change of the constitution and holding early elections and a change of the political trend in Iraq. These protesters have come here in order to actually, they're opposing the candidacy of the nominee for premier, and he is against him becoming the premier. In this place, lawmakers were supposed to hold a meeting on the candidacy, but that meeting was cancelled. So this parliament, as you can see, protesters are here at this parliament, and they are supporters of cleric Muqtada Sadr, and he is waiting for him. They will not leave here until the cleric orders them to.
China says that it will resolutely safeguard the country's national sovereignty and territorial integrity, referring to Taiwan amid rising tensions over the self-ruled island. The Chinese Air Force said it has many types of fighter jets capable of reaching Taiwan. It said it has the firm will and sufficient capability to defend China's territory. U.S. media have recently reported that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi could pay a visit to Taipei during her regional tour that begins on Sunday. However, the itinerary for her trip released by her office has skipped any mention of a stopover in Taiwan. Beijing says Pelosi's visit would send a wrong signal to separatist forces in the island. China considers the self-ruled island as part of its territory. Moving on, Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement has released a video showing surveillance of several Israeli chartered ships operating at the Karish field in the Mediterranean Sea, which is partly claimed by Lebanon. The footage includes detailed coordinates of Israeli ships showing their names and locations. The video also shows Hezbollah's anti-ship missiles being prepared to be fired. The video refers to warnings by Hezbollah's Secretary General Syed Hassan Nasrallah earlier this month that all Israeli vessels at the Karish field are within reach of the group. He warned that if Lebanon was prevented from extracting oil and gas in its waters, nobody would be able to do so. The dispute between Lebanon and Israel escalated in early June after Israel moved an extraction vessel to the Karish field. The video is released hours before a U.S. mediator, Amos, arrived in Lebanon to push for the settlement of the dispute. Official data show that U.S. economy shrank for two quarters in a row. That signals the unofficial start of a recession there, an issue denied by President Joe Biden and White House officials. The side positive facts include a low unemployment rate, but that alone is not enough to push economic growth. The Federal Reserve has already raised interest rates four times this year to control inflation, which is at a 40-year high.
The U.S. economy has entered a recession. Based on the official definition of a recession, when the economy contracts for two consecutive quarters, that is the definition of a recession. Recession fears for the U.S. have been ongoing for some time. One of the factors which speeded up the decline of the economy was energy prices, which have affected the prices of goods, from food to basic stuff, leading to inflation. The U.S. is experiencing over 9% inflation, something it has not experienced in over four decades.
The American economy is being bashed from pillar to post right now by a whole range of factors, but certainly it's going into recession because there's severe headwinds being caused by, first of all, the government cutting back on its spending in a ridiculous attempt to balance its budget, which it should not be trying to do in the first place, and then high interest rates compared to what they have been in the recent past, even though they're below the rate of inflation, meaning that households are no longer borrowing, and in fact they're probably paying their level of debt down.
The U.S. president has been trying to portray this as a temporary phase, which the U.S. economy will overcome.
We're not going to be in a recession, in my view. The employment rate is still one of the lowest we've had in history. It's in the 3.6 area. We still find ourselves with people investing. My hope is we go from this rapid growth to steady growth.
But as things are going, especially the war in Ukraine, this is anything but temporary. The mayor of New York has painted an even bleaker picture. He has said that we are in a financial crisis like you can never imagine. Wall Street is collapsing. We are in a recession.
President Biden has said the U.S. has avoided a recession, citing steady spending and measures to rein in inflation. But that now sounds like a broken record. Inflation is not tamed. Prices at the pump are lower only because the U.S. has had to release more oil out of its emergency reserves. And it is quite hypocritical to say that spending is steady, as the U.S. public debt is standing at over $30 trillion.
The poor state of the U.S. economy is typical to many economies around the world, especially the ones in Europe. One of the telltale signs is the price of energy, which has affected Europe so badly that economies in countries like Germany, the UK, France, and Italy are all experiencing GDP contractions or slow economic growth. The Ukraine conflict is definitely one factor weighing down on the economies, but it would be wrong to blame the negative economic performance just on the war itself.
No, I don't think the government's done a good job, because all last year this began and they did nothing because they thought it was temporary. And, you know, during the pandemic, everybody got passed out money, including stores and all of that. And so it's like too much money floating around. They were very late to the game. And I don't think the administration's really put it as a very high priority.
Consumers are being bashed by inflation running about 5% per year higher than wage rises. Now, in that situation, consumers are likely to be trying to do everything they can not to spend.
The U.S., similar to Germany, is carrying a deficit. That is when companies import more and export less, dynamic that weighs down on the GDP. Yet the future looks bleak. As economies are still facing the COVID pandemic, with supply chains not fully recovered, the U.S. is pursuing an aggressive policy towards China, which involves a trade war. Europe is bound to follow the U.S. lead, which can only make matters worse for their economies.
And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The ocean of dua.
For ourselves, Hussein, Hussein, the slain.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarisi, and in this edition of The Ocean of Dua, we are trying to discuss and talk about the different aspects of Ziyarat Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, Ziyarat al-Ashura. So stay with us.
منكم منهم ومن أشياعهم وأتباعهم وأوليائهم يا أبا عبد الله إني سلم لمن سالمكم وحرب
As you were with us, dear listeners, we were explaining this part of the Ziyaratul Ashura. Ya Aba Abdillah, inni silmun liman salamakum, wa harbun liman harabakum, ila yawmil qiyamah. O Aba Abdillah, surely I am at peace with him who is at peace with you, and at war with he who is at war with you, until the day of resurrection. We discussed the meaning of the word silm, which literally means peace. It can also be translated as submission. And if we translate this so, it means we are expressing our submission to those who are submissive to Imam Hussein alayhi salam and the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. The word harb signifies the contradictory of silm and peace. And in this case, it means anger. And when the anger intensifies, we say someone haribah, or it means ishtadda ghadabu. It means his anger intensified. We said and concluded earlier on that this phrase teaches us that being at peace and being at war, these two must be understood, these two must be interpreted in the light of submission to Allah, which is true Islam. And peace with the forces of kufr has no meaning. Now let us have another look at this verse. Inni silmun liman salamakum wa harbun liman harabakum. I am at peace with he who is at peace with you and at war with he who is at war with you. Of course, we rendered this phrase inni silmun liman salamakum as I am at peace with he who is at peace with you. And also the next part, harbun liman harabakum. We said it means I am at war with he who is at war with you. But this phrase literally means I am peace, inni silm. This means I am silm, I am peace itself. Wa harbun, and I am harb, I am war itself. This is because the infinitives silm and harb, these two are employed instead of the active particles musalim and muharib, and they reveal the intensity in expression. This means the zair, the one who is reciting this part, is expressing his or her most intense peace and unity with he who is at peace with Imam Hussein, with the companions of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and he is expressing his intense war against who is at war with Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
When people ask, I'm confused about which school is right or which madhab is right, go to Karbala. Look at Karbala, it clarifies it instantaneously. Anybody says, I'm confused, say, please go to Karbala and tell me what happened, why it happened, and what does it have to do with your religion. You will see it completely exemplifies. It clarifies, it takes all the blurs out instantaneously. SubhanAllah, that's the miracle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's main foundation of morality is do not allow tyranny. Do not allow evil doing. Do not allow indecency. Why is Imam like this? Because he knows Allah. He appreciates him. He understands his dimensions. That's why we must love them so much. We must love them so much that don't let anybody else take us away from them. There should be no room in our thoughts. No matter who we admire in this world, no matter how great a person we look at, never move the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt out of the center of the heart. Never.
they will know that their Khalifa lied to them because he told them they don't pray. And if they see them praying on the battlefield, their hearts will change. So stop them from praying. Imagine how evil these people were. That's how much lies they had. And you cannot eradicate this lie at the level that we're talking about unless you give your blood for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Now let us explain more about the phrase harbun liman harabakum. I am at war with he who is at war with you. Harb and war, as we translated it, does not always necessarily take place by means of guns and ammunitions. Being at war with somebody can also happen if the person is at war with the others and attacking their minds, attacking their souls. Attacking a culture is also harb. Disrespecting human values can be accounted as harb. These things can also sometimes be more powerful and destructive than ammunitions. The important thing, however, is to distinguish the different war fronts, is to defend and fight valiantly in the way of Allah. Ya Aba Abdullah, we call him. He is the best of those servants of Allah who are submissive to him. Now let us move to another aspect of this ziyar. We must find a basis for our friendship and our enmity. If the basis of friendship and enmity are different, this equation cannot come to be true. So we should find a unified basis for both friendship and enmity. And in our case, our criterion can be anything but truth and love for Allah. And this is what Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam says. As-Siddiq man kana nahiyan 'ani adh-dhulmi wal-'udwan mu'inan 'ala al-birri wal-ihsan. A friend is the one who prohibits wrongdoing and transgression and assists the ones in doing actions of virtue and good. So you see, both being at peace and being at war with something, both positive and negative aspect of being a true friend are mentioned. We have many traditions, dear listeners, that help us understand who our true friends are, and those traditions also help us in distinguishing, in the best way possible, our enemies. These traditions help us understand the best criterion for befriending someone and for our enmity. And that is why we are highly recommended to refer to those traditions if we want to understand these parts of Ziyaratul Ashura more. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode of the program. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
أنت الذي صنعت من الرمح منبرا ظمآن والزمان بعينيك ممطرا نعم الأمير أنت حسين وقدوتي ساروا إليك قلبي وعقلي ودمعتي يا محيي الكرامة تبكيك كل عين لبيك يا إمامي لبيك يا حسين الروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين لبيك يا حسين.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The United States has given the green light to more arms sales to East Asian nations in a bid to counter China. The package of arms and munitions, which is worth $900 million, has been approved by the State Department and is set to be sold to Australia, Japan, and Singapore. A potential deal with Australia includes 80 Lockheed Martin precision-guided air-to-surface missiles and associated equipment. The deal, which is said to be worth $235 million, will allow Australian jets to stay outside the range of the opponent's air defense units while launching attacks. Back in April, Canberra approved that $2.44 billion US dollars worth of, quote, improved weapon capabilities be quickly delivered to the country from the US. Australian officials claim they need the equipment to meet the country's increasingly complex and challenging strategic environment. The package for Japan would include 150 advanced medium-range air-to-air missiles. The missiles, which are to be installed on the country's F-35 fighter jets, are worth more than $290 million. Singapore will receive $630 million to supply its fighter jets with air-to-air missiles. Australia, Japan, and Singapore are considered U.S. allies in the Indo-Pacific region against what Washington describes as the rising threat from China.
Yeah, this one, these sales of weapon to Japan and Singapore basically came after a speech of General Milley, where he complained about the aggression, the posture of the of the Chinese military, especially the pilot, when they intercept any aircraft from the United States or from their ally. So they said that they wanted to give a weapon to be effective against possible interception of aircraft.
The sales of advanced weapons to U.S. allies in the region come amid rising rivalries between the United States and China. Washington is pursuing a policy of cooperation and coordination with regional countries against China. It aims to push these countries to contribute more to joint regional military programs. It's now believed that the United States, which has been the preeminent military power in that region for decades, can no longer guarantee by itself a regional balance of power. Global geopolitics is changing, contrary to the expectations and demands of politicians in Washington. It's now an open secret that China is a rising military and economic powerhouse in the East Asia region. With major advances in missile technology, naval forces and intelligence, China is well on its way to becoming world-class military power. It has already surpassed Washington in several areas. And apart from that, China has massive economic ties with the regional countries.
With the exception of four countries that are already, for historical reason, very much linked to the United States from a military point of view, it means South Korea, Japan, New Zealand, and Australia. All of the other countries here are quite difficult that they can enter in a kind of alliance, a military alliance, as the NATO in Europe. There are many reasons, political reasons, but also economic reasons, because China is growing so fast and their economy, the economy of these countries, are very much interconnected with China one.
China is concerned about the belligerent rhetoric coming from the U.S. Beijing and Washington have been at odds over several issues in recent years, including trade and the South China Sea. But Beijing's ultimate concern is Washington's meddling in Chinese Taipei. China has made it clear that it will not allow the self-ruled island to secede. It has already strongly warned against a potential visit by the U.S. House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi. And the dispute over the strategic island may prove to be a real challenge between the two superpowers in the coming years.
Tensions are rising between China and the United States. Beijing has issued a stern warning against a potential visit by the U.S. House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi to Chinese Taipei. Beijing says that Washington will be responsible for the consequences of the possible visit. Chinese side has made it clear to the U.S. that it is firmly opposed to Speaker Pelosi's visit to Taiwan. We are fully prepared. If the U.S. goes its own way, China will certainly take firm and forceful measures to safeguard its national sovereignty and territorial integrity, and the U.S. should be held responsible for any serious consequences.
So the idea that she would visit Taiwan at this point is intended to provoke a crisis with China. Recall that the U.S. and the British forced NATO expansion, totally ignoring Russia's security interests, with the so-called reverse Cuba Missile Crisis, whose purpose was to provoke Russia into acting against the neo-Nazi regime in Ukraine in order to justify the wildly illegal and self-defeating sanctions, economic warfare against Russia.
Analysts believe the latest warning by China against the visit of the U.S. House Speaker to Chinese Taipei was harsher in tone and very stern. Some say the threats contained an allusion to a possible military confrontation between China and the U.S., and that is why reservations have been raised in Washington about the visit. The U.S. House Speaker was scheduled to visit Taipei earlier in April, but the trip was apparently canceled after she contracted COVID. However, some reports say that Pelosi will make the controversial visit in August. Apart from top Democrats, some hawkish Republicans have also come out in favor of the visit, stressing that this visit is a show of support against China.
This is a very serious crisis. How China responds is very difficult to foresee, but it's a moment in which the literally madmen and women in the West are trying to do to China what they are in the process of doing against Russia.
There are few people today who doubt that China is a global superpower, both militarily and economically. In terms of the economy, China's economy has continued to grow over the past few decades and is well on its way to overtake the U.S.'s by the year 2030. In terms of military and technology, China is now a superpower on par with the U.S., although Washington's military budget is still the largest in the world. Politicians in Washington who are still dreaming of a unipolar world order that came into existence following the collapse of the Soviet Union do not tolerate the rise of China. The first sign of the unease began to emerge after the former U.S. President Barack Obama announced his pivot to Asia policy, which was meant to counter China's rising influence. Obama's successors, Trump and Biden, have continued Washington's anti-China rhetoric. The two superpowers are locked over a number of issues, including trade and the South China Sea. The bone of contention is Chinese Taipei, and Beijing has made it very clear that it will not allow the self-ruled island to become independent.
It really can only be averted at this point by the nations of the West recognizing that they have no solution to the now terminal breakdown of the dollar system, the hyperinflationary collapse, other than sitting down with Russia and with China in a new Bretton Woods conference to replace the now completely broken and destroyed Bretton Woods system that was set up by Franklin Roosevelt and has been systemically taken apart over these last 30 years.
Chinese Taipei is under China's sovereignty and under the One China policy. The United States and other countries have recognized that sovereignty. But Washington, in violation of its own stated policy, and in an attempt to irritate Beijing, has increased diplomatic contact with the Chinese Taipei.
Israel has a history of either attempting to or conducting acts of terrorism in Iran, but more often than not, Tehran successfully discovers and prevents such attacks. On Saturday, Iran's intelligence ministry issued a statement saying that members of a terrorist group affiliated with Mossad were identified and arrested by Iranian security forces before they could take any action to carry out acts of sabotage. The ministry added that terrorists who were in contact with Mossad agents through one of the neighboring countries had sneaked into the country while carrying highly explosive bombs. Later, reports emerged that the espionage planned to blow up a sensitive facility in the central Iranian province of Isfahan. This, however, isn't the first time Israel had planned on carrying out acts of terrorism in the Islamic Republic of Iran. Iran's intelligence ministry forces had also captured individuals linked to Mossad in April. The spies were involved in disseminating classified information and documents. In July, Iran arrested another network of agents while they were carrying a large cache of weapons and ammunition with the intentions of provoking riots and terror inside the country.
Earlier in March, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps foiled yet another Israeli act of terror. The Islamic Revolution Guard Corps said it stopped an imminent Israeli plot to sabotage the Fordow uranium enrichment plant.
Israel has, however, conducted a few terrorist acts against Iran over the past years, namely the murder of top Iranian scientists and army generals and acts of sabotage on nuclear sites. Yet, interestingly enough, the regime continues such atrocities without being held accountable by the international community, and more specifically the U.S., who has supported Israel through its veto power in the United Nations Security Council.
The impunity with which Israel carries out such attacks or in this case, makes such plans is fully enabled by the United States of America, which at this point, I believe, should be deemed responsible for the crimes and the destabilization that the apartheid state of Israel engages in. The primary way that the United States enables the crimes and the destabilization of Zionism and the colonialist apartheid state of Israel is through its veto in the United Nations. Since 1972, the United States has vetoed 53 resolutions attempting to hold Israel to account by way of international law.
Israel has been involved in a string of sabotage attacks on Iran's nuclear facilities in recent years and has killed many top nuclear scientists and military officials in cowardly strikes. More recently, on May 22nd, Colonel Hassan Sayyad Khodai was assassinated by two motorcyclists who shot him five times before fleeing the scene. He was dismounting his car to enter his home in an eastern neighborhood of the Iranian capital when three bullets hit him in the head and two bullets in the hand. While Israel has yet to officially comment on the incident or take blame, all reports and facts indicated that it has so far been behind the terrorist activities in Iran. Regarding the Khodai case, American outlet The New York Times cited an intelligence official as saying that Israel has informed American officials that it was behind the assassination. Despite all this, the regime continues its petty attempts of trying to accuse Iran of destabilizing the region.
Israel attacks its neighbors on almost a daily basis, for example, bombing Syria, whereas Iran has not attacked a neighboring country in over 300 years, or almost 300 years. Furthermore, the very well-known international human rights organizations, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, as well as B'Tselem, the Israeli human rights organization, have deemed Israel to be an apartheid state, which inherently, as such, destabilizes the region. So there's nothing new here in terms of the Israeli and American narrative, their propaganda regarding Iran. What I do see as new and heartening is the fact that the effectiveness of this narrative is weakening very rapidly.
Israeli atrocities have also garnered fierce response from Iranian officials. The chief commander of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps has warned that Iran will take a harsh revenge on those who assassinated a member of the force in Tehran.
The commander of the Iranian Army's ground force has warned that Tehran will raise Tel Aviv and Haifa if Israel makes any attempts against Tehran. Brigadier General Qumars Haydari also stated that Israeli occupied territories will be liberated in less than 25 years. Russia says it might go beyond Donbas, where it once laid the lines of the conflict in Ukraine. The shift was articulated by Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, who said one reason Russia might expand its operation are the longer-range rockets and artillery the US and NATO allies have been funneling to Ukraine.
The geography is different now. It is not only about the DNR and the LNR, but also about the Kherson region, the Zaporizhia region, and a number of other territories, and this process is continuing, consistently and persistently.
Lavrov's remarks are the clearest comments that Russia's objectives have expanded over the 5 months of war. Earlier, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said Lavrov's statement confirmed what Washington and its allies had suspected were Russian President Vladimir Putin's objectives all along.
He has stated a number of times that, you know, this is a limited operation focused on the Donbas. His actions have proven otherwise.
The U.S., despite claiming that it knew about Russia's intentions, only seems to be further fueling the war through its support for Kiev. The U.S.'s military assistance has topped $8 billion U.S. dollars, part of a $40 billion aid package. And all this while analysts view diplomacy as the only tangible solution to the ongoing conflict.
The U.S. empire's strategic aim is to expand NATO eastwards, right up to the borders of the Russian Federation, stage coups where necessary, as in Ukraine in 2014. And in the words of Canada's Deputy Prime Minister, Chrystia Freeland, to vanquish Russia divide it up and gobble up its component parts, the better to march on to China. It's a hegemonic agenda, and there is no way that the U.S. will tolerate the Ukrainian government having a negotiated peace with Russia. Rather, the plan is that to drag the Russian Federation into a long war.
Washington claims to be supporting Ukraine to defend itself. Officials in Kiev have, however, suggested that Crimea, which the West still recognizes as part of Ukraine, could be a target for U.S.-made missiles recently deployed by Kiev. The remark, however, prompted a fierce response from the former Russian president, warning that an attack on Crimea will ignite a Judgment Day response. The West, led by the U.S., apart from supplying financial aid, has also imposed a wide range of unprecedented sanctions against Moscow in support for Kiev. The bans have targeted individuals, banks, businesses, and state-owned enterprises, including the oil and gas sector.
The U.S. also planned an economic war on Russia by leveling economic sanctions, which are unilateral and illegal, by excluding Russia from the SWIFT transfer system, by stealing its monetary resources stored in Western banks, and by cutting it off from its natural trading partners in Europe.
The economic impact of the war and the sanctions on Russia is showing across the world. Inflation is up in many countries, global supply chains have been disrupted, and there are fears of food shortages. But now, experts fear the situation, especially in Europe, could further deteriorate as the continent struggles to find middle grounds on solutions to the current uncertainties.
But the U.S. sanctions backfired on the West, especially on Europe, where Europe took the brunt of the energy cutbacks. And it caused the U.S. war caused an inflationary crisis for the entire world.
All this has also led to indications of fatigue settling in the EU. The Hungarian Prime Minister has so far been the most vocal about his concerns regarding the bloc's strategies on Ukraine.
West's strategy on Ukraine has failed as governments in Europe are collapsing like dominoes. Energy prices have surged. A new strategy is needed, which should focus on peace talks and drafting a good peace proposal instead of winning the war.
But despite the heavy costs incurred by Europeans, the bloc's leaders seem to have set their eyes on continuing their way. While standards of living in many countries have already deteriorated drastically in light of decisions made by policymakers, problems may further worsen in the future. The International Energy Agency has even warned that a potentially disastrous natural gas supply crunch this winter awaits Europe, mainly due to the possibility of Russia cutting off gas supplies completely.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.